Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome, you guys. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I love talking to smart people. And you guys, I got one of the top smart people going right now. Adam Levy from Next Generation Chesapeake Bay Retrievers is joining me. And we're going to talk about retrieving dogs and bird dogs and breeding dual dogs. And we're going to talk about a lot of cool stuff. All right, crew. I am super excited to introduce the Better Breeder Certification Program from the Better Breeder Institute. This program recognizes purposeful dog breeders dedicated to the preservation and advancement of their breeds. Conservation dog breeders have long struggled to differentiate themselves from backyard, for-profit, and commercial breeders in the minds of the general public. This program was developed to help purebred puppy buyers identify better breeders. The Better Breeder Institute certifies breeders who produce healthy, beautiful, and predictable puppies bred to the breed standard, and who raise the bar with their breeding and business practices. Certified breeders can save hundreds of dollars annually with exclusive discounts from leading brands in the dog industry. Plus, this program directly contributes to breed health research and is the only breeder merit program created to support efforts to breed a better dog. To apply, go to betterbreeder.org/certify. betterbreeder.org/certify. Check it out, y'all. Welcome, Adam. How you doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing great.
Excellent. So talk to us. Give us the 411. How did you wind up in Chessies? How did you pick Chessies? Why in the world did you pick?
If you could think of the visual of a Chesapeake is kind of my first introduction to Chessies. I grew up in New York. I was the only one in my family to hunt. So I hunted with a specific guide and I went out 3 days a week with him. And when I was 17, we got to the boat ramp. It was one of those rainy, foggy days. It was cold, you know, sea duck hunting. It's either raining or snowing.
Yeah.
And coming through the fog was a guy on his boat. And the Chesapeake was just sitting right on the front of the boat and came right into the boat ramp. And I was like, I need one of those.
They are a fantastic breed. My dad had one when I was a kid. We used to be kind of like the dumping ground for all the sporting dogs in the world. Like it just wound up that way. And my dad had a Chessie that he picked up beside the road. Never could figure out where she came from. Tried and tried. Like so many of the old school Chessies, she eventually had to be put down because she bit people. But she was the most incredible bird dog, duck dog that I've ever seen. So I really love to hear people's origin stories. So when did you get your first, like, actively involved with it, Chessie?
I got my first Chessie going on 16 years ago.
Okay.
That's actually the dog right behind me on the wall.
On the wall? Side. Yep. I can never figure out which end's which.
I got him from a breeder in Massachusetts.
Okay.
Her kennel and her breeding program was based off of Karen Anderson's Chestnut Hills.
Okay. I was just going to say, was it Diane? Can't think of Diane's last name.
Baker?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I evolved from there.
Okay. Beautiful. And then, beautiful.
Yep. So the dog's name was Gunner. Was a wonderful dog. I ran hunt tests with him. He got his championship and confirmation. I'm just an overall competitive person. So I was like, if I'm going to get a dog, I want to do it right. Yep. So that was my start. And then, you know, dumb young kid, you know, I thought I had the best dog in the world.
Always.
And I had to go out and get a female. Oh. I was like, I'm going to be a Chesapeake breeder and just kind of took off from there.
Hey, you know what? We need more young, dumb people. Come on, man.
We definitely do. We definitely do.
Maybe we'll just say young people.
You know, every time I mentor people or I talk to new people that are looking to get a dog to breed, you know, the first thing that we want to do as breeders is kind of close off our brain and be like, no, you got to do all these things. But I go back and I think about, you know, 16 years ago, where I wanted to do those dumb things. And, you know, imagine if somebody just started telling me no. Yeah. So I got to kind of keep that in the back of my head when I talk to people.
I love that. And 16 years, you've built a pretty impressive record. Talk to us a little bit about some of your dogs. I know you've got at least one or two Best in Show winners already.
We have 5 Best in Show winners.
Okay. I knew there was a couple I could think of. So good.
Yeah. We have 5 Best in Show winners. 3 of them have hunt test titles. 2 of them are master hunters and also are qualified all age in field trials.
Nice.
We've had 3 of them were in the top 10 sporting dogs. Mm-hmm. And the dog that we have now is the number one sporting dog in the country. He's not an old dog. He's just 4 years old. He's already produced master hunters and senior hunters and doing a really nice job.
See, okay. So I want to talk about a couple of things. I told you when we started, I want to talk about retriever tests and trials, and I want to talk about creating dual dogs. But now that was the segue. We're just going into dual dogs.
Okay.
We'll get to the
jump right into it.
Yeah, we'll get to the retriever stuff after, because this is, any of my listeners know, this is my huge passion, and I love talking to people who have that same passion. So talk to us about how you start with this one dog and go all the way to 5 Best in Show winners, 2 of them with master hunters. That isn't something that happens by accident. What was your plan? How did you get there?
You know, as soon as I really got into this, you know, we were training dogs professionally, and we have access to really watch dogs and watch a lot of dogs from the litter go through training. So you're able to, just because a dog is pretty or well put together, or just because a dog has got a master hunter title, doesn't mean the dog should be bred. Doesn't mean that it should really keep producing forward. So I'll use an example right now. I had a litter of puppies. We had 14 in the litter. I have 9 of them in training right now.
And okay, that's a lot. So do a little quick segue for me. Next Generation is not just your kennel name. It's also your training facility that you have with a co-owner. Am I correct?
Yeah, with Andrew. Yep. And Andrew and I started this 14 years ago together. We met in Texas. I moved to Texas to open up a martial arts school. He moved to Texas to start working for another professional. I dropped my Chesapeakes off there and kind of, we just turned into hunting buddies and went from there. Andrew is, and I'm not just saying this because he's my business partner, but probably one of the best dog trainers and the fairest dog trainers I've ever been around. Always thinking and evolving. I always hear the same thing every year. It's, I wish I had this dog this year that I started last year.
Right.
So that's kind of a little bit about Andrew. But, you know, we have the ability to really watch these dogs and a lot of dogs from litters and make decisions on what works and what doesn't work. I get to watch them grow up and watch them go through that mental development, and watching dogs that are supposed to go on that upper level and seeing where they have pitfalls and what their positives are, and then be able to make those decisions breeding forward. So I think that really helped us push at a faster rate. Yeah. You know, I got 40 Chesapeakes in training right now, and 30 of them are here for either hunt test or field trial training.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk a lot in the sport about the good old days where everybody had 100 dogs they could run on. Numbers matter. And the ability to have your hands on that many dogs matters. So what are your absolute must-haves and what are your absolute won't-haves?
I don't mind a soft dog. I don't think that is a bad thing. As long as you have some grit behind you. I don't care if you have to kind of slow everything down and get them through the yard, as long as they have some good grit to them and they have that desire for themselves. I won't take a quitter. A dog that wants to quit is just a big no-no for me. And a dog that just doesn't look good doing the job that you've asked them to do, you know, we have to remember that the standard was meant to be able to have a dog that can last long. I want to be hunting with my 10-year-old dog. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be fighting through injuries because I've hunted this dog. I was just in Canada and we shot 1,000 birds over a couple days. I want to be able to hunt that dog every day without it being sore or breaking down. So being able to be structurally sound and being able to have the brain to do the job that you ask them to do, is those are must-haves for me. And being able to have the willingness to quote-unquote cut a dog from a program because they're not that. And I think that's the hardest thing for breeders nowadays, or people that can't have large numbers of dogs. They don't want to cut the 1 or 2 dogs that they have living in their house. And so I think that's where we kind of get stuck in mediocrity sometimes.
Preaching the choir. I was telling you this story off air, but this is real. I had many years ago, just an absolutely beautiful little bitch. She finished her championship, no problem, all of her health clearances. And I swear to God, I sent her to a friend of mine because I'm like, I can't make this bitch do anything. Can you make this bitch do anything? And she tried everything you can imagine. And anytime you asked the dog to do anything, she would literally roll over on her back and wave her feet in the air.
Right.
This is not going in my breeding program.
Right. And I don't care how pretty you are. What is that doing to help you?
Right. Exactly. No work ethic is no work ethic. And it needs to go bye-bye. Right. And you'll laugh. I do presentations on this exact topic to the like NAVDA guys, right? Like, just because your dog will kill itself to do what you want it to do doesn't mean it should have to.
Right. 100%. And then vice versa, you know, we had a dog that we sold this year, got his master title really easily, got six straight passes, was a young dog, 2.5 years old, kind of went through training really nicely. But I called up his co-owner and I was like, hey, he's just not what we want to be producing forward. Let's put him in a really good hunting home and let's move on to the next dog and let's start over. You have to make those hard decisions.
Yes, 100%. So in your breeding program, are you line breeding, inbreeding, outcrossing, phenotype, genotype? How are you thinking about, because it's so hard because you've got, it has to look good, it has to work good, it has to be healthy, and it has to have a good mind. So you're not just doing one or two of those things when we're doing this type of project that you and I pursue. So what's your thing?
Everything and anything that you just said under the sun is will do. I line breed a lot. Very rarely I'll outcross, you know, every so often, but I know I'm losing something when I outcross and then I have to come back in tight. And I think that there's a huge science behind breeding. I think we need to stop just looking at just health clearances and making sure that these health clearances match up, or I'm putting two master hunters together. There's a science behind breeding and we need to get back to that. Back to the days where there was breeding kennels and they were held in high regard. So line breeding for me is extremely important. I'm not against inbreeding on the right dogs either. You know, I know that that's such a scary word for people, but with the right dogs, you lock in type. And then you can worry about where to go from there. If I did an inbreeding and I have an issue here, you know, I can outcross there and then come back in afterwards. Right. You deal with what you're given. I outcross a lot less than I'd like to talk about. I had this discussion with a well-known Chesapeake breeder. I'll leave names out of this. And she says, line breeding doesn't work in this breed. And I go back and I look at her program for many years. And I was like, well, I understand why you think that. But it's just, line breeding is not a breed-specific thing. Yeah. It's what your
basic genetics are basic genetics.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yes, I'm a big, big, big line breeder.
Yeah. I was stalking you a little bit before we got on air and saw you've got a breeding coming up to a dual champion. Is that a dog that you got to see?
No, I didn't get a chance to see him. I have some wonderful mentors in the breed. And that was the dog.
That an he's old not dog? A dual, yeah. I didn't recognize the name.
Yeah, he's not a dual champion. He's produced dual champions.
Oh, okay.
Yep, he's a qualified all-age dog. His name is Benny. His crack shot's been there, done that. And one of my wonderful mentors in the breed, Linda Harger, bred to him and had a wonderful litter of puppies. And his pedigree brings a lot to the program. And his pedigree on the top side and the bottom side, I've played with a lot of. You know, three generations and two generations back. And I'm really excited to see what he brings to the program and kind of go from there. I like to bring in a couple of those field dogs. I might lose a little bit, but I can, again, move from there. So I like to bring those in because you have to keep your desire. You have to keep your brain. You have to keep that to really push forward in the goals that you have, which mine is always, you know, my main goal is to produce an FC that can win a best in show.
That's always been mine. Like I said, Mom and I bred the breed's first best in show dual champion, and we have a dual futurity award that's on my wall, right? Those are things that matter. And so one of my prettiest bitches, the bitch that everything I have right now goes back to, was 3/4 field trial bred. And she was winner's bitch at the national. And so, Awesome. Yeah, we are lucky, right? Chessies and Warehairs. Like there's not so much divide between the field trial and the field dog and the show dog that we can't do this.
Yep. The only living dual champion in our breed right now was bred and owned by Linda Harger. He's still alive. Okay. He's 9 years old.
Oh, wow.
Has 90 all age points, is running like he's a 2-year-old still, which shows, you know, he's put together properly. Mm-hmm. But when Linda contacted me to have him finished, I was like, let's show him at a big show. Mm-hmm. Let's make it really mean something.
Yeah.
And we brought him to supported entry, and he went winner's dog every day that weekend for 5-point majors to finish. Right. And, you know, it shows that the divide is not there. You know, obviously you're going to have dogs that on both extremes.
Exactly.
But yeah, he's well put together and he produces it nicely.
It's really interesting to hear your conversation about this, because I think it's the same thing. Like, you're trying to find the happy medium where you have the drive and you have the structure to support the drive.
Yep. Hank, which is a dog that we campaigned in 2018, 2019, he broke the best in show record that was about 30 years old. He was a Master Hunter qualified old age dog. He was the first retriever ever to win a best in show that was a Master Hunter qualified old age dog. And he comes from two parents that have never seen a duck a day in their life. But, you know, that's the other thing, is we don't need to just be searching for certain titles. We need to be able to see something in a dog.
Yeah.
And Hank had it and produces it. You know, he's produced now a national specialty winner, a best in show winner. He's produced Master Hunters. You really got to know what you're looking at moving forward. And that dog came from one of my mentors and who I call a mother, which is Diane Baker.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
Hey, you guys, does your dog have itchy, like sensitive skin? If so, think about trying the new ProPlan Veterinary Supplements Skincare Soft Chews. This supplement is specially made to support dogs' skin health, including conditions like sensitive skin and seasonal allergies. ProPlan Veterinary Supplements Skincare Soft Chews feature collagen, EPA and DHA, vitamin E and zinc to support the dog's skin health. Omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids help maintain the natural skin protective barrier. Vitamin E provides antioxidant support, while zinc offers immune support. So look for the National Animal Supplement Council quality seal on the package that certifies that skincare soft chews meet the highest quality and compliance standards for pet supplements. They also taste great and are easy to add to your dog's daily feeding routine. ProPlan's Veterinary Supplements Skincare Soft Chews are available via the My Purina app or by visiting purina.com/mypurinaapp, where you earn points on every purchase. You can also buy it online at Chewy and Amazon and in stores at Petco. Talk to me about, I mean, I know how this is for me, so I'm curious to hear from you. How much weight, how important is it for you to have seen, actually hands-on seen the dog's work or in the ring or what have you, for as much as you can in the pedigree?
It's getting more and more. I've watched Master Hunter dogs in the field that I would never want to breed to. I've watched Best in Show dogs in the ring. I've seen them in the ring. I put my hands on them. I would just would never touch them. Mm-hmm. It really makes me scratch my head when breeders are, you know, pushing a dog that I'm like, I don't get it. I just don't get it. I don't want it in my program. So it's getting more and more, unless I have somebody that I really trust with a really good eye that can tell me, hey, this is the dog to breed to from the 80s and the 70s. And I've used a lot of frozen semen in my breeding program, but those came from people that I really respect as mentors that have proven themselves over and over again.
I encourage people all the time. Like, the only way that I think you learn your breed and learn your pedigrees and learn what you've got, you can put your hands on all those dogs. Not all of us have the ability to have 40 dogs in the kennel.
Yep.
Go to the national, see the dogs in the field and in the ring.
Yep.
Watch them.
And whether you like the
generation after generation.
Yeah. Whether you like the judge at the national or not, that's not the point. You never go to a national thinking I'm going to the national to win.
So much.
I can't stand that. Don't miss your nationals as a breeder. Whether you have 2 dogs or 100 dogs, don't miss your national. Something might pop up. I found a dog at the national who my breeding program is so – I've used him 5 times already, and I just bought frozen semen on the dog.
Oh.
And I saw him at the national in the 4 to 6 month puppy class. And I was like, I'm using that dog. There's a time I'm using that dog. And I was the first person to ever use the dog. And – God, my breeding program is I line breed on that dog. I continually use that dog when I need to fix, you know, short upper arms is a big thing in every breed. This dog is constantly producing nice length of upper arm with good layback and really produces good brains as well.
Good God. I mean, you'd like, can we have him bronzed, just stamped? That'd be great.
Yep.
Just saying.
But you got to breed him to a line bred bitch. You got to breed him properly.
Right.
But I would have never seen this dog if I didn't go to the National and I didn't get a ribbon at that National.
Right.
So
right.
You got to go to the National to see dogs. You got to see them in person and go to your field trial, especially in watch dogs. Go to the WD and watch dogs. Go to weekend hunt test and watch dogs.
I just came back from the Wirehair National and I spent a lot of years on a horse, but I don't get to as much anymore. But every year, if I can in any way, I get on my fat, happy Heine on a horse and I ride and I watch dogs at least through the amateur so that I can see the Derby and what these dogs are doing at least in the first stakes. So
yep, you have to. And I think that that's the advantage that I have is I get to go outside and I get to watch these dogs every day put form and function together. And I would say that that's probably my biggest advantage is I really get to watch it every day. So
yeah, agreed. Okay, so I promised we were going to get back to this. I could just sit and BS about breeding stuff forever, but a lot of people don't know the difference between a hunt test and a field trial, particularly in retrievers. So when you say a master hunter dog that's got open all age points, they have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So break that down for us in like the kindergarten speak version.
Okay, so there's a huge difference between hunt test and field trials.
Yes.
So big. So the highest level of hunt test is a master hunter. Mm-hmm. You have three levels. You have junior hunter, senior hunter, and master hunter. The junior hunter is a dog picking up one bird that fell on land and water. They get two birds on land, two birds on water. One bird is thrown at a time. A senior hunter is two marks going down, and the dog has to pick up two birds, so they have to remember a bird, work on memory. And then they also have to run blinds as well. And a blind is a bird that went down that the dog never saw. And you have to give them direction on where to go. And then a master hunter, highest level of hunt tests, it's three birds down, more series, three series with blinds, a lot more complex.
Yep.
So that's the highest level of hunt tests.
Non-competitive. I think that's the thing we need to make sure people understand. It's a pass-fail.
Yep. Dogs are being judged to the standard. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter how well the dog next to you did compared to your dog, as long as your dog is doing the work to the standard of AKC hunt tests, your dog will pass.
Yep.
So it is a pass-fail. And then you have field trials, which is just a straight-up competition. Mm-hmm. And field trials, you have derbies, you have minor stakes, which is your derbies and your qualifyings, and then you have all-age stakes, which is your amateurs and your opens. That's where your FC, your AFC happens, where you see a dog that says QAA or QA2, those are qualified all-age dogs, are qualified all age two dogs, which is now an official title through AKC.
Okay.
And then you have your derby dogs, which are dogs that are getting ready to...
Young dogs.
To push, yeah, young dogs, under 2 years old, which is all doubles with multiple series, four series. Field trials are way bigger setups. You know, you can have birds out to 400 yards. Mm-hmm. You can have people that are standing out there and then they disappear. So the dog saw a white coat out there at one point, and now they came back from another bird, and it's gone. It's a whole nother world, and that's all competition. I love
straight lines. Straight.
Yep. Straight lines.
Like we were talking earlier, and I don't know how much of this I've talked about on the podcast, but I literally cut my teeth in dogs in a white lab coat, throwing maggoty ducks into a scumming cow pond. So I feel it with hardcore field trial lab guys. So talk to us about the difference, because this is where the rubber hits the road, really, in the retrievers, is the labs, like in spaniel hunt tests, the springers are kind of the gold standard. And in pointing breed field trials, the pointer, or, you know, sometimes the setters are the gold standard. In retriever field trials, the lab is the gold standard, with Chessie
probably
the next behind it. Talk to us about why that's a difference.
Just straight up numbers, there's a lot more of them. The other thing is that there's a big split in the breed.
In
labs. You know, there's a field lab, it will never do anything in the ring.
Nope.
And a lot of confirmation dogs can do well in hunt tests. They're probably not going to do well in field trials. Mm-hmm. And it's sad, but it's just the reality of it. And I think that they have one focus, and their focus is strictly on field trials, running big, running long. And that's their focus. And I think that that's why they have a better success. You know, they're breeding specifically for something, mm-hmm. where in Chesapeakes, we're breeding for everything in one, mm-hmm. and it makes it a lot harder.
Mm-hmm. It does. Yes.
You know,
yes, it
does. You want a dog that can perform, that is structurally to the standard, that can also go out there and compete with those dogs at the highest level every weekend. And it definitely makes life difficult, but it makes a lot of fun.
It's the challenge, right? I mean, that's the whole point of the exercise.
Exactly.
And I think my experience, Labs and Chessies work differently. Like, they have different styles of working. They really do. I think that that has something to do with it. It certainly does in the Spaniel hunt test. Springer flush is a lot harder. You know, Clumber Spaniel is what we had. They like to trap their birds. So they're just not quite as, like, you know.
Yeah, Chessies have a humanity to them, and they can overthink situations very easily, and it gets them in trouble. So you start doing too much repetition with them, and you'll start having them make mistakes because they're like, why are you asking me to do this over and over and over and over and over again, the same thing? Why'd you send me to that pile 30 times? And they're like, maybe I'm doing it wrong, so I need to do something different.
Right.
And they're not being disobedient. They're just thinking a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. And Labs are more than happy to do it 30 times in a row.
And they're probably not tired yet.
No, not tired yet. I mean, let's just be real, man. I did baseball blinds with my dad's field trial Labs when I was, you know, 18. So. Okay, so to wrap it up just a little bit, what are your goals going forward? Like, what is, like, your dream? You've been at it 16 years. You've had tremendous success in that amount of time. Where do you want to get to? What's the end goal for you?
I think a dog that can really add to the breed, that can mentally, physically, emotionally be an FC, that can go in and be a very competitive dog in the field, in the ring as well. You know, that would be breeding a best in show FC dual champion. That would be, that's where my head's at. My head can't come off that goal. It's not going anywhere until I do it.
I love it.
And then figuring out how to lock that in and doing it over and over and over again.
I'm going to tell you right now, from personal experience, that's the challenge.
Yep. You know, I had a dog that wasn't started off that way. He had the brain to do it. And he ended up being a top sporting dog. He had 6 best in shows. He was QA2 in field trials. He had open placements. We just started him a little late for that. Mm-hmm. If I can get him over again, you know, I'd redo him a little bit differently. You know, it's the, you know, I wish I had that dog last.
It's,
you know,
the Mr. Potato Head, right?
Exactly.
Can I just have this one's brain and this one's front assembly and that one's coat? That'd be great. Thanks,
exactly.
God.
You know, and it's my current dog's father, so it's not too far removed from where I'm looking for. You just got to tweak little things.
And I don't normally dive into personal lives on podcasts, but I think a little comment about you and Devin and the team that you make would be, I would be remiss if I did not, mention that.
Evaluating puppies and evaluating dogs is probably the most fun thing in our house. You know, and then Devin gets to come out when she's home, and she loves watching the dogs out in the field, and, you know, she runs dogs. And I come from somebody that has such a great eye and is so talented hands-on with a dog. I really get to see what a dog really looks like to their full potential with her. And I think it's definitely taken the breeding program to heights that I, at a faster rate than I could have ever imagined. And it doesn't even have to do with the ribbons of winning. It's just being able to really see a dog move properly and watching a dog, you know, what they really look like. And being able to talk about those things.
Presented right and all the stuff.
Exactly. You know, who would have thought a Chesapeake would have 60 best in shows?
Yeah, that's weird, man.
And Devin just has that, you know, I call it the magic hand. Mm-hmm. You know, she figures it out, but we discuss that specific dog as a puppy at 8 weeks old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we banter back and forth. And, you know, I love that competitive side of things with her. But yeah, it's a fun thing in our house.
That's pretty awesome. I can remember when Devin was a little kid in juniors. If that makes you feel any better.
You know, and
there's
no gray area there. She'll look at me and she'll be like, yeah, the dog's good in the field, but get out of your breeding program. And I'll be like, okay.
Well, yeah. Well, and I think honesty, I think that really is, right? I mean, that's a thing. Yep. Like you have another one of my seminars I talk about, ruthless. Like you have to be ruthless.
Emotion needs to come out of breeding. And we should love our dogs and our dogs should be our pets and sleeping in our bed and love our dogs like they're our own family. But when it comes to breeding, you need to take the emotion out of it.
Yes.
You have to make the right decisions for your breeding program.
Preach.
And for the breed. And that's the hardest thing. That is, you know, it's the best dog I ever had, so I want to breed him. Just because he's the best dog that you've ever had doesn't mean that it's going to help advance the breed.
I am leaving it at that because that is a statement of fact. All right, Adam, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it.
Awesome. It was very nice talking with you.
All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life, you know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.